Federal News Radio's Tom Temin is here, and music to the ears of federal employees, 3.3% would be a pretty robust pay raise if they're able to make it happen.
If it was not originating in the Republican-controlled House, it probably could have a chance. But, you know, whether it'll actually pass into law, pretty doubtful at this point. And, of course, the president is on record as wanting 1%. So if he got a bill like that, that would be quite a dilemma. You know, do I go with my 1% or do I go ahead with the 3.3%? But I think it's a good signal. It shows federal employees that somebody cares.
You heard my conversation with Colleen Kelly, I believe.
We did.
The National Treasury Employees Union yesterday. I came away from that conversation understanding, first of all, better how they got to 3.3, because Mike Causey suggested you don't just pull a number like that out of your hat.
Otherwise, it would be 12.3.
That's right. But the thing that that struck me after I talked to her yesterday was, it doesn't have to be 1% or 3.3. It's very likely we could see something in between. The markers are laid down now. And somewhere, some horse trading back and forth, somewhere in between there, might wind up being what we actually see. And it could be toward the 1% side of it, and it could be toward the 3.3% side of it. The good news, I guess, is that if you're a federal employee and you're worried about a pay freeze coming back, that's probably out the window now, because it's now we have a range, it seems.
That's right. The 1% is already in there, and I think that given the budget deals that have been overarching all of this, at least the 1% is going to come in. And, I guess it is possible that there could be something more than 1%. And, for individuals, 1% on average means some people will get more than 1%. Mm-hmm. That means some people will get less.
Yeah.
But there is some managerial discretion within that 1% pool.
I also noticed that the bill that Congressman Jerry Connolly and Congressman Jim Moran are sponsoring includes the blue-collar employees, too. Remember when they were talking about the 1%, they had to do a special bill for the blue-collar folks, and this gets everybody all wrapped up into one.
Yes, it does. And, of course, you know, the very low-paid federal contractor employees are getting ostensibly a raise by presidential order. So if there are people at that level on the federal payroll, it kind of brings them at least somewhere in line with what their contractor counterparts would be getting also.
Federal News Radio's Tom Temin is here. You talked this morning about the desire of Catherine Archuleta, the OPM director, to keep health insurance premiums in place, or in check is the term that she used. I would like a lot of things. I would like to, you know, drive a Jaguar, but I don't anticipate that happening anytime soon. And I wonder what the reality of trying to keep FEHB premiums in place is in the healthcare environment we're in.
Well, if there's any place that stands a chance of having stable premiums, I would say it's the federal employee health benefit plan, just because the population is fixed.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in every other plan, people with pre-existing conditions can come in. And so that is the big wild card. And you can't deny anyone. And so, I mean, that's part of the core of the whole debate around the Obamacare initiatives. But so in the private sector, who knows what's going to happen? So mm-hmm. far, they've been going up. In the federal sector, if everything stays the same, that has the best chance of being stable. Whether they won't go up at all, hard to say. But it may not go up as much as those that are serving exclusively the private sector.
She has quite a job ahead of her.
Yes, she does.
You know, you saw, I'm sure, the story in the front page of the paper on Sunday about Boyers, the big cave where the federal employee retirement records are stored, and how that whole operation runs out there. And it's funny, I got calls from people around the country who were calling me saying, is this really how this works? And yeah, this is, I mean, you know, we've known about this, those of us that cover the federal government, for a long time. It's not, right, it's not news. But I was struck by the response, which was not really positioned as a response, but she wrote on her blog this week, Ms. Archuleta did, because of the hard work of our employees, OPM's made significant improvements to retirement processing efforts over the past year. We're expanding the retirement case management system being developed with resources Congress provided in 2014. She's talked to Jason Miller, and you can find that at federalnewsradio.com, about their IT reform efforts. It sounds for all the world like she's going to make another go at digitizing and modernizing this retirement processing system that John Barry couldn't do, that Linda Springer couldn't do. I mean, they've been trying, they've been pitching at this for years and years and years, and it's never happened. And I'm certainly not one to say just because it's never worked means it's never going to work.
Well,
but I don't get a sense of what's going to be different this time around.
Well, the only thing that could be different is if they try a different approach altogether, which is not try to – they have to envision the end state where there is a essentially paperless system. But it could be 10 years before all the paper is squeezed out of it. So they have to pick an application, pick a subsystem at a time, and use the, you know, what people are calling the agile development approach. If they can discipline themselves to keep the long goal in mind and take careful, deliberate, deliverable steps, they might have a chance of making progress. But also within reasonable cost per year.
Mm-hmm.
If they take that approach, they've got a chance. But the other thing, too, she's doing is trying to put quality back into the hiring process and not so much pedal to the metal type of as our own Jack Moore is writing at federalnewsradio.com. She didn't say that that's what outsiders are interpreting her actions as saying.
Yeah.
She wants to have quality. But she is asking about satisfaction, both of the managers with the process and of the hires and what they thought of it. So it's not just a pure emphasis on hiring people fast.
Well, I think that makes a tremendous amount of sense. I mean, there were folks who expressed that fear when John Barry started to talk about speeding up the hiring process because former chief human capital officer said to me, if you hire the wrong person in 3 weeks, you've still hired the wrong person.
Yeah, and you've cost yourself months.
Yes, exactly. Just because you've got a seat warm doesn't mean that you've done your agency any favors. You've done more harm than good.
No, that's right. But the average is still above the 80 days. It's something like 87 days. For the last last year they've counted. So, I mean, 87 days is still a pretty long time,
mm-hmm.
you know, by industrial standards or by private sector standards.
Well, I'm not suggesting there's room for improvement, but I think it's encouraging that the emphasis is not only on the speed and how fast can we bring humans in, you know, because that gets you into a mindset of, well, if the person looks like they're kind of maybe sort of right for the job, and, you know, the glasses fog up when people breathe on them, then they're okay.
You know,
that's not what we want, it doesn't seem to be.
No, I used to know a train conductor who used to boast that they took 2 hours to hire me and they've been trying to get rid of me for 30 years. He was proud of that fact. The customers didn't think so much. But, yeah, that's the phenomenon that's the other end of that.
Also on federalnewsradio.com this afternoon, Tom, is the story that the Defense Department wants action from Congress now about where they're going to be able to cut and how they are going to be able to cut pay and so on. And it seems to me that pushing Congress to do anything fast is never a recipe for satisfaction. You know, they might get what they want eventually, but Congress doesn't seem to be able to move at that kind of speed, no matter what kind of pressure you put on them.
No, it's funny. Congress is kind of a dichotomy there. They can make the big gesture with a law, but sometimes they're very bad at the details. And yet when they leave the details to the agencies, they don't like what agencies come up with.
Right.
And I think that's the conundrum that both DOD and Congress are facing. But if they want, you know, a smaller force and they want more budget control over the next umpty-ump years, then personnel is the biggest issue there.
One final question. Do you think that that Admiral Greenert, the chief of staff of the Navy, kind of went off the reservation when he said that the Navy wasn't interested in more BRAC? Army's been pushing for BRAC forever. The overall position of the Defense Department and the administration is we need at least one more round of BRAC. I haven't drilled down into their plans to see if the Navy is included in any of it, but it just surprised me that Admiral Greenert in Norfolk the other day went very publicly saying, we don't think we need to do any more BRAC when the administration's been pushing it from so many other directions so much.
Well, it could be that, you know, if you have a Navy of so many ships, and that number is very fungible these days, depending on what ships you count as far as warships,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, what you count as halfway in mothballs and what's really afloat. I mean, you'd almost need a satellite to count the actual ships. But even if you reduce ships, does that mean you can reduce ports? Well, probably not, because you need a port for one ship or five ships. And then inland, that's another question. You know, if they reduce the civilian workforce, then maybe they don't. But there are a lot of Navy logistics and support facilities that are very far from the coasts. And so, you know, he may be just posturing to say, you know, just to fend off further cuts, because I think the fleet itself is under the knife.